This is the Decibel Geek Podcast with Aaron Camaro and Chris Sinzak.
Surprise! We're back. Yes, it is time for the Decibel Geek Podcast. And we told you we had a surprise coming up, and man, did we deliver. My name is Aaron Camaro, joined as always by my hard rocking friend, Chris Sinzak. How you doing, brother?
Pretty excited.
Oh, yeah.
Got to kind of fulfill a dream for both of us last week.
Yeah, pretty damn cool, man. Really damn cool. We did it. We finally got Ace freaking Fraley on the show. He's on the Decibel Geek Podcast for the first time ever. Man, we're going to talk to him for over an hour today, and it's pretty awesome. You're going to hear a couple of dudes fanboying out, and I think you're going to love it. Now, before we get to all that, normally here we would do our reviews and recommendations. I see we got one, but I think we'll push that off to next week. It's been a tough one for me because I just lost my dad. I want to thank everybody that's reached out and shown me love. It's like I got a worldwide support group. So for this episode of the Decibel Geek Podcast, Chris, I'd like to dedicate this episode to our fathers, yours and mine. You lost yours many years ago. I lost mine a couple of days ago. But if there's one thing that those guys knew about their boys, it's that we were crazy about the band Kiss.
Yeah.
Maybe they didn't understand it. Maybe they did. But they knew that we were crazy about that band. And to know that all these years later that we'd be interviewing Ace Frehley, our dude, our favorite guy, I got to think they'd be pretty proud.
Yeah, I think you're totally right. And yeah, absolutely. Let's dedicate it to both of them because, you know, some of our earliest musical memories involve our parents, whether it be good or bad, whether they're like, oh, I like that, or what the hell are you listening to?
Oh, man, yeah, 100%. If it wasn't for my dad's Black Sabbath albums, I don't think I'd be here doing this today.
And same with my dad's Beatles, Stones albums, CCR, all that stuff. And with Kiss, my dad, he kind of came around on them, but not fully. But he always was like, if you like it, good for you.
Yeah, yeah. They didn't have no choice but to accept it because it's just who we are. That's the kind of thing that tripped our triggers when we were little kids and just loved it ever since and have always been Kiss fans and fans of Ace Frehley. That makes it a real trip today that we're going to be talking to him, and it makes me feel good. And my dad was gone before it's coming out, but I got to think he would think this was pretty cool.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know mine would too. And when I told my mom, she was over the moon excited for us too.
Yeah, my mom too.
She's like, oh, that's so awesome.
There's only a couple of people that knew this was coming this week, our Decibel Geek VIPs and our moms.
Pretty much. Yeah, we didn't really tell anybody. We wanted to kind of drop this as a big surprise for you guys.
Really cool.
And we know Ace has been on everyone else's show under the sun this past couple of months, but still fun for us.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be fun for you guys, too.
Yeah, and we did try to come up with some outside-the-box questions and get some interesting stuff out of him. And he was a lot of fun to talk to.
Man, we've been on a hell of a roll here lately on the Decibel Geek Podcast, knocking stuff out left and right, coming out with awesome episodes that everybody's digging. Last week, an all-time favorite, Fresh Blood, doing our part to keep rock and roll alive in the modern age. Yes, guys like Ace Frehley have been kicking ass for 100 years, it seems like, and he's still doing it today. But man, we got to think about the future of rock and roll, and that's why we do Fresh Blood. Introduce you guys to 10 bands that most of you, I'm guessing, have never heard of before, but the response we got was amazing. And it always reminds me why it's so important that we do that show. It's because we turned on a whole lot of people all over the world onto 10 bands that are up and coming and deserve the love and attention. And man, we got all kinds of great response from the people. We got awesome, grateful response from the bands. And the people that take that, and when it's out and the episode is released, you get that notification that there's a new Decibel Geek Podcast, and you take that and you share it. What you're doing is you're helping us keep rock and roll alive by spreading the word about what we got going on here on Decibel Geek. When you do that, it makes us so happy. But most of all, it puts you on the list. The list? Oh, the list of the most awesome people on the face of the planet. True rock and rollers. I'm talking about Geeks of the Week.
Geeks of the Week this week are Adam Cox, Rock and Ron Runyon, Kristen Schimbeck, Mark Alden Taylor, Freeform Rock Podcast, The BS Sessions, Mikas Rathchild, Hate Zero, John Harper, Patrick Breen, Mark Starsky, David Glenn, Aaron Baker, Shay Hargett, Todd Cunningham, Jeffrey Mendenhall, Samuel Wetz, Eric Senzak, James McElhenney, Grayson Gallegos, In Obscuria Podcast, Tom Logsdon, Pantheon Podcast, Thor Bjorn Olson, Blazing Russ, Shane Aber, David Cathy, Ralph Vieira, Bill Wang, Will Honeycutt, Joseph Capone, CGCM Power Chord, Tom Smoke Belmondo, Keith Rockford, Whiskey Scenario, Eladio, Gregory Muse, Ernesto Aguiar, Kevin's on Fire, Hakan Bergstad, Jay Shablewski, Vet Halen, Whiting Guitar Works, Victor Ruiz, Scott Crouch, and as always,
the Mooger Fooger. Oh yeah, those are our people. They support the Decibel Geek Podcast, and they love hard rock and heavy metal music, and they're doing their part to help us keep everybody in the know about the coolest rock and roll podcast around, especially today. Oh, especially today. This is special. Oh man, this is cool. I want to thank Pantheon Podcast for helping us make it happen, because they're bringing you the Decibel Geek Podcast every single week. They've got the most awesome roster of music podcasts out there. They got the good stuff. You're going to find your new favorite rock and music podcasts over on Pantheon. So we got a couple of people we want to thank for making this happen.
Yeah, we definitely want to give a shout out to Tim Bream for also putting us in touch with Giovanna from Monarch Heavy, Ace's label. And thanks again for helping us make this happen.
Oh, man, the moment we've all been waiting for. I know you're ready. I'm ready. So for the friends and family of the Decibel Geek Podcast, for the first time ever, your one and only true spaceman, the one and only Ace Frehley.
Oh, yeah.
I had the weirdest fucking dream last night, and I met this kid on the beach, and it just, what he said to me, it sounded so fucking funny. He goes, I go, what are you doing? He goes, well, I got $10 in my pocket and a dead cat. What the fuck does that mean?
I'm sorry, but that's the most Ace Frehley thing I've ever heard.
$10 in my pocket and a dead cat.
I could do anything.
Too funny.
Well, how you enjoying the success of the new album? Looking at the chart positions, you did really great with this one.
Yeah, it surprised everybody, and I think a lot of people got caught with their pants down, like especially Walmart. You know, they only did 2,000 units of the lenticular covers that when you moved them to left or right, the lightning bolts on the cover disappeared.
I heard a lot of people complaining about that they went to Walmart to get their copy and they didn't have it.
It sold out like that. They should have printed out 10,000. They would have sold them. So I ended up buying almost 1,000 from them. And I'm going to autograph them and sell them on tour.
That's smart.
Yeah, especially for the people that weren't able to get one.
Yeah, you can't get them.
I know a couple of years ago when Origin came out, the second one, I went to Target to get it, and I look on the shelf, and it's not there. So I ask the guy, and he's like, Ace Frehley? And he's like, he still puts out music? I'm like, fuck yeah, he does. Now give me a copy of that CD. So I made him go in the back and look, and he found two of them. I was like, well, give me the one. And so I took it, and it was like, you know, Ace Frehley's got a new album coming out. Stock the shelves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
First, there's a lot of fucking idiots who think I was still in the band, even though it was Tommy Thayer. I swear to God. When Tommy was in the band, you know, even 10 years in or more, you know, I get phone calls from friends of mine around the country. Oh, Kiss is playing and bye-bye. I want to come see you play. I go, I'm not in the fucking band. Are you kidding me? Because if you remember correctly, when I left the band and they brought Tom in, there was no big press release.
No.
They really didn't want people to know.
It's
they
true.
They were trying to, you know, just make things ride copacetically and have people think that Tommy was me, which any intelligent guitar player would know the difference.
I don't know. He mimics you pretty good.
Yeah. Well.
Well, let's go way back to the beginning. I wanted to ask, you know, that's the famous story about you auditioning in orange and red sneakers. This, I have a couple questions from our friend Tim Bream. I think he's a mutual friend of yours as well. What do you remember what brand the orange and red sneakers were?
I think they were Cons or Con knockoffs, but I had an orange pair and a red pair, and I'm always late, so I was rushing. And the light was dim in my bedroom the day I auditioned for Kiss. So I just grabbed one sneaker and one fits on the right, one fits on the left. I didn't even realize they were two different colors initially. You know, that was not planned. And I grabbed my reverse Firebird with the banjo tuning pegs. And the rest is history, you know. It just...
Yeah, it is.
I didn't know it was a Firebird that you auditioned with. I didn't know that.
I used the reverse Firebird with single pickup, one tailpiece, and just the volume of the tone. I remember when I went to see Clapton in the Farewell Cream Tour, he was using the same guitar. That's awesome. What's bizarre about it is when you put your hand, you rest your hand on the bridge like I do, and it was a mini humbucker on that guitar. When you look at the guitar from a distance, all you see is a volume and tone control. You don't see any hardware whatsoever.
Hmm.
I actually had it in here the other day.
Oh, you still have it?
Nice.
Yeah. The Gibson Custom Shop made me a copy. But yeah.
Wow, look at that.
Just imagine, beautiful. You know, you put your hand here and you're playing.
Yeah.
What you fucking see is the volume of the tone. And you don't even see any fucking...
Oh, wow.
...tuning pegs, because it's banjo tuning pegs.
Oh, that's wild.
Wild. This is a great guitar.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
It's, the only thing I don't like about this is the neck is a little thicker than my Les Paul.
Wow. The guitar style that you auditioned with. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I was wondering, there was a story about during the recording of Strange Ways for the Hotter Than Hell album that Peter Criss had insisted on recording a drum solo. Did you guys actually record that drum solo, and does it exist anywhere?
Record the...
Remember, Peter wanted to do like a John Bonham-style drum solo on Strange Ways?
I don't remember anything about a drum solo. Whenever I think of Strange Ways, it's one of my favorite guitar solos.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that I remember, like it was yesterday, I was with Eddie Kramer, and I had the Marshall head in the control room, and the speakers were out in the drum room, and... something wasn't happening. I wanted to get feedback. I wanted to get, so I said to Eddie, I want to stand in front of the fucking stack and do this guitar solo. And he says, you won't be able to hear anything in the monitors in your headphones because it's so fucking loud. You're playing on 10. I said, I don't care. I'm just going to wing it. I got a rough idea what I want to play. And I did the solo in one take, and that's what you got on the record.
Wow. That's awesome.
That's definitely one of the most unique solos that you've done, for sure.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I know you said in the early days of Kiss, you weren't really comfortable as a vocalist yet, and that's why the other guys did vocals on the songs like Cold Gin, Strange Ways, and Parasite.
That's true.
But on the Origin albums, man, we finally got a chance to hear what those songs would have been like if you sang them, which is really cool. But I was wondering, you know, you've also got writing credits on Coming Home, Getaway, and Flaming Youth. Would you consider doing any of those songs on upcoming albums?
I've thought about it, you know. Possibly, you know, we're slated to do Origins Volume 3 next year. And I'm going to work with Steve Brown again because he's just such a pleasure to work with. And he works fast like I do. You know, if you can't get something in 3 or 4 takes, put it away, go on to something else, because I like spontaneity. So, and Steve's the same way. So it's, we worked really well together on this album. You know, we usually get a song every day, me and him working together. And he had a studio in his basement about 45 minutes from this studio, which you could see is my little bat cave.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's such a cool room. And I got to bring this up. I didn't even have this on our list of questions, but Aaron and I, over the last couple times you did the Origins album, whenever it was coming up, we would do our own version of the podcast where we would call it Aces Covers Contenders, where we would suggest songs that we think you should cover. Right. For one, I had an obscure Budgie song called Reaper of the Glory I want you to cover, but Aaron's got the best idea, I think, of any cover song, and I want him to pitch this to you.
Well, okay, so you've got a knack for taking songs that are pretty cool and making them really awesome. And I think two perfect examples of that are like Fox on the Run, which the original's got a lot of keyboards in it, but it's still a cool song. When you do it, it's fucking awesome. And another one I really like is I Want to Go Back. I was never a big Eddie Money fan, but when I heard your version of the song, I was like, man, this is killer. And then it made me go back and appreciate Eddie Money more. So I was thinking about it. Here's my pitch for Origins Volume 3. I would love to hear Ace Frehley do You May Be Right by Billy Joel. You know the song I'm talking about? You may be right.
Oh.
I may be crazy, but it just might be a lunatic you're looking for. Come on, what do you say?
Yeah.
Yeah?
It's a possibility. Oh, man. I mean, I'll give it a listen and get Steve's opinion.
Yeah.
Because he's going to be co-producer as well on this next project.
Ask Steve about that. He's going to say that's genius. You could rock out that song so good.
When did that song come out is the question.
Well,
oh God.
Yeah, it would have been
late 70s?
Late 70s, I guess.
Late 70s is really out of the realm of what Origins Origins are supposed to be about, songs that influenced me as a teenager.
Yeah, I got you. I get so that.
It came out in the late 70s. I'm already in KISS.
Yeah,
right.
That's true,
the
but
problem with that song, you know.
I mean, it's Origins. You can do whatever the fuck you want.
It's true. I'm gonna try to stick to the original theme behind Origins, and that was to pick songs that influenced me as a teenager, or you know, 21, 22. Before I joined KISS when I was 23. Yeah. And I'm going to try to keep it within those boundaries because, you know, I think, you know, it's important to, you know, a lot of those songs I used to play in clubs. So, you know, it there's a wealth, you know, I mean, that was the golden age of rock, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, that 1 year, in the mid to late 60s, you know, besides the Beatles and the Stones, you have, I mean, when I was 15, I cut school and I went to see Mitch Ryder and the Detroit Wheels because I was a fan. I liked the guitar player. And lo and behold, the Who and the Cream are opening for them. And I had never even heard of the Who or the Cream. It was their first New York appearance.
Wow.
And it may have been their first show in the United States. But needless to say, I was super impressed with both bands, and they left a major impression on me. And of course, both of those bands went on to become superstars.
Yeah, for sure.
But one thing I remember thinking in my mind, I remember watching those groups and saying they're fabulous.
Yeah.
But I also remember saying to myself, you know, you could do that too. From the time I was 15, 16, I always felt I was going to be a rock star. And I used to tell people and they'd laugh at me. And, you know, I'm the kind of guy when somebody says you can't do it, I try twice as hard to do it. And that's kind of what happened. I never gave up. And I went to more than one audition for different bands. Yeah, I was convinced that I was going to be in the super group, and that's what happened.
Don't ever let anybody tell you your dreams are stupid.
There you go. I think anything you put your mind to, you can achieve if God gave you the talent and the will and the looks. I think image is so important. I remember when I was in my teens, I had bands, you know. I would kick guys out of the band if they wouldn't grow their hair. To me, it was really important to have long hair and have an image.
Well, and that's what worked for you guys, because all four of you, even on your own before you all met each other, were into the visual idea. So it's like it was kismet that you all came together with the same kind of vision for the band.
Yeah, the only difference is prior to Kiss, Paul and Gene had a group called Wicked Lester, and it was more of a Beatlesque kind of music. They particularly really weren't heavy metal, hard rock guys.
No.
Per se.
Right.
You know, but I was, you know, from the get-go, and so was Peter, and they kind of said, I remember them saying, you know, we gotta play heavy music because that's what's happening right now. So it was more, for those guys, it was more like, let's do what's popular rather than let's do what's in here. And, right. Yeah, it kind of shows over the years, you know, where they're at, you know. To them, it's all about the money.
Well, I'm just thankful that flutes didn't wind up on the Kiss version of She like it did on Wicked Lester.
Yeah.
We don't need any Jethro Tull in the Kiss sound. Well, let me bring up one weird song from your early days that didn't make an album, but you guys played it in the clubs, Life in the Woods. What do you remember about that song?
I believe Gene wrote that song, and it's kind of a weird song.
It really is.
I mean, I love Gene. He's such a fucking character. For example, I asked him, what do the lyrics of Deuce mean? He goes, I have no idea. I pick words that rhymed, you know?
Right.
But, I mean, what the fuck? Pick up and get your grandma out of here. Old Jim is working hard, you know. You know, your man's worth a deuce, but, yeah, doesn't mean anything. I think, you know, back in those days when they were early writers, they weren't so concerned with what they were saying was just as long as it rhymed. And, you know, I believe that, you know, I am to this day, but I still try to follow a theme that I came up with, you know, like Blinded. You know, I said to Steve Brown, I said, you know, we got to write a song. We can't write every song about chicks. So I said, let's write a song about artificial intelligence. And then we came up with Blinded, you know?
Right.
I like that.
And I wrote most of the lyrics for that. And even though I don't use the term artificial intelligence, from the lyrics, you can tell what I'm talking about.
Right.
You know? And then I end the song saying zero and ones rule the world. Zero and ones got us by the balls. Yeah. It's because I was reading, you know, a couple of different articles about how artificial intelligence is really taking a life of its own. You know, Google put out a robot that has access to 20,000 computers. It can beat any chess champion in the world. So what does that mean?
Yeah.
They're smarter than we are? I don't know. The robots definitely have access to more information than any one human being.
Yeah, because true.
How can any one human being, you know, keep 20,000 computers in his brain?
Yeah, it's crazy stuff, man.
I know. I say, you know, with the whole alien thing I used to be into, I just, you know, kind of let it go, because we all know they're here. We all know they've been here. We all know they've affected us in certain ways.
Oh, yeah. They even had congressional testimony last year about it. So, I mean, it's more out there than it used to be.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, my old girlfriend's grandfather was stationed at Roswell.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. He's like, I think he just passed away. But he was in his 90s. He told me it was all, they definitely recovered bodies and it was a flying saucer. It wasn't a fucking weather balloon.
Yeah.
And I've heard that from several different sources that were in the service who, you know, there was a crash that happened down south. And my publicist told me, she goes, her uncle said, yeah, they got the bodies in a locker somewhere, you know, locked away. I mean, you know, when you think about now that we've uncovered the size of the universe, for us to think that we're the only intelligent life on this planet in the whole solar system is crazy.
Right.
The odds are 1 billion to 1, if not more.
Well, if you feel that way, if you feel that we are the only ones, and I have to question humans' intelligence to start with, I mean, come on.
Or arrogance.
Yeah, it's a lot of arrogance, too. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of space out there. There's got to be other stuff. I mean, we already know about Jindal, right?
Yeah, I don't know where the fuck I'm from, to be honest.
Did you come up with that planet name back in the day, or did somebody give that to you?
That's a good question. I think my friend Larry came up with the word Jindal, a guy I went to high school with. Unfortunately, his health is not doing too well. Yeah, I'm 72, and I outlived all these fucking guys. Yeah, a lot of my friends are sick and dying, and it's a little depressing because I'm in good health. You know, my fiance cooks all organic. She's got me working out. I dropped 45 pounds over the last couple of years. And it's funny. I went for a blood test and a physical with my doctor. And he started fucking laughing at me. And I go, what the hell is so funny? He goes, I'm looking at your chart, and for the last 3 years, your blood work has got progressively better. He goes, you're the only fucking patient I have who's aging in reverse. I have no idea. I mean, I know I have good genes, and I know I have longevity because my dad lived to be 96. My aunt on my mom's side lived to be 99. So I have longevity on both sides of my parents. My mom lived to be 86, you know, but she would have lived longer if it wasn't the fact that my father passed away and she was lost without him. They were inseparable. So, you know, she started deteriorating after he passed away, and, you know, it was ironic, though. My sister called me up and goes, she goes, Mom's been diagnosed with Alzheimer's. I go, really? She goes, yeah, I walked in there with Charlie, my brother, older brother. She goes, she didn't know who we were. I said, really? So I knew in my heart, you know, I was my mom's favorite. She used to tell me. So I knew if I flew into Michigan, where she was staying at a rest home, that she'd know me immediately. I walked in her room and immediately she hugged me and said, Paul, how you doing? Which is my real name. And that made my day.
That's awesome.
Of course. Yeah.
At least she didn't go, holy shit, it's Ace Frehley from Kiss.
Nah, sheesh. It was always Paul.
Yeah.
I was always her favorite. And she was a great lady, you know. She didn't have a bad bone in her body.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you a little bit about the early New York scene. I know that Kiss was kind of viewed as outsiders to that scene, but I've seen an image of you at a New York Dolls, like, Halloween party, and I got to feel, am I right in assuming that you and Peter were more integrated into that New York rock scene than Gene and Paul were?
You got to understand, Paul and Gene didn't get high. So they were kind of weird and didn't hang out with people that got high, and all those bands got fucking loaded. So I was getting loaded at the time. So I got along great with all those guys. I was friends with Wayne County. I was really good friends with Arthur Kane from the New York Dolls. We hit it off like salt and pepper.
Right on.
You know, Arthur loved Colt 45 malt liquor. I don't even know if they still make it. Do they?
Works every time.
He used to walk into my room with like 2 6-packs of 16-ounce cans of malt liquor. And we'd get drunk and then we'd sniff some glue. And we'd be off to the races. I don't know.
Yeah.
It was crazy. Yeah.
What about with the Dolls? I was a fan of the Dolls. I thought it would have been cool to hear you and Johnny Thunders collaborate on something. I love both of your guitars.
Yeah, I was friends with Johnny, but I think he was a little intimidated by my abilities, because even though he had a fabulous image and he was a good guitar player, he wasn't as proficient on the guitar as I was, so... Right. I think he might have been intimidated a little by, you know, all my lead work and stuff. Plus, I was, he wasn't that tall of a guy, so I towered over him.
Yeah.
And, you know, we were just friends, and, you know, I'd have a couple of beers with the, who was the singer again?
For the Dolls? Oh, David Johansen.
Yeah, he was a funny guy. But Arthur was the shit. And he was so soft-spoken, and he never had a bad word to say about anybody. He was just the salt of the earth. I love that fucking guy.
Did you ever see the documentary about him?
Yes, I did. And I actually remember meeting him in California when he was doing that thing for that church he was with.
Mm-hmm. The Mormon church.
The Mormons, yeah. I mean, you know, he had pretty much fucked up his liver. And abstinence was really the only thing that was going to save him. And then what the fuck did he come down with?
I think it was leukemia.
Yeah. Well, that's par for the course for California. Have you ever noticed that people that live in California come up with the weirdest fucking cancers and diseases?
No, I hadn't noticed that.
Well, trust me, I've noticed it in a big way, and I know why. You know, the San Susana Field Laboratory, which was maybe 30 minutes from Hollywood, they had a couple of meltdowns. They had some small reactors there. They were testing jet engines for the moon, and... You know, I've done hours and hours of research on this place, and they polluted the whole California area.
Dang.
And the studios buried it. But if you do any reading, if you just go on, if you go on the internet and you type in San Susana Field Laboratory, cancer clusters, all the people that live around that area. Now they're suing Boeing because the Boeing company bought out the San Susana Field Laboratory. And supposedly they're trying to do a cleanup. But the problem is a lot of the radiation went into the soil. And it went down into the groundwater. And guess what? San Susana Field Laboratory is just north of Malibu.
Dang.
So... the groundwater has fucking radiation in it, and it's hitting Malibu now. And just go on Zillow and see how many houses are for sale in Malibu, like every other one.
Wow.
And there's another reason why people are selling their houses in Malibu is there's an island off near Catalina that was owned by the military, and they stored toxic waste, radioactive waste, and the barrels are leaking.
Oh, shit.
So what happens is Malibu's getting hit from the water, and they're getting hit from the groundwater from the San Susana Field Laboratory, and everybody's getting sick. People are dying of cancer, but weird brain cancer. I mean, Vince Neil's daughter died. She had numerous tumors in her body. He only lived 10 minutes from this place. He ended up suing them, and supposedly what I understand, he got a couple million bucks.
Wow, you know, you never hear about this. I'm surprised that's not a bigger story.
He signed an agreement, a non-disclosure agreement, but I heard from the inside.
Wow, that's something.
And you're not going to hear about this shit because the studios have, I mean, imagine if what it would cost to move all the studios up to San Francisco or down to San Diego. It would be crazy. And all the realty, you know, people that know about this do not want to live in California in that area.
Well, no.
And so many people have gotten sick. It's really a sad commentary on this country that, you know, they'll hide things from the public that are killing them. Yeah, a lot of times money is more important than people's lives.
Right.
Dang, Ace, you're the coolest history teacher I've ever had.
I've done a lot of research. Like, most bread that we eat in this country is the wheat is engineered by Monsanto. And it's genetically engineered to have pesticides inside it. So when you eat bread in this country that was made by wheat, that was treated by Monsanto, the conglomerate company that puts out all different types of foods, we're absorbing pesticides in our body. Mm. For example, my fiance, she'll buy organic wheat and, you know, organic this and organic that, and that doesn't have any chemicals or pesticides in it. So smart. I'm happy about that. She's a health freak and a fitness freak, and she helps me work out. And, you know, I'll go, I don't like this part of my body, I need work, and she'll give me the exercises because she used to be a personal trainer. So life's good, you know. She's keeping me up there and in shape, and she's a great lover, and
and she's a stone cold fox.
You saw her in the Cherry Medicine video.
Yeah.
That video
was awesome.
That looked like a lot of fun.
How old do you think she is?
Too young for you?
She's 54.
Wow.
She don't look it.
But her daughter's the really hot one with the leopard top.
Yeah.
Everybody's asking me, who's that really hot chick? You know, some people saying she's my daughter. I guess in reality, she's kind of my stepdaughter, or will be once I tie the knot. But, I mean, Laura's 54 years old, and, you know, she looks like she's in her mid-30s.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah, I got a good one. Yeah. I was lucky.
I can tell you've been smiling for a long time, and I think that's got a lot to do with it.
I've been smiling. You know, we met 5 years ago, and we just hit it off, and I'm in a really good place with her. We laugh at it. We have the same sense of humor, you know. She could probably kick the shit out of me, you know. She knows kickboxing and shit. You know, she's stronger than me because, you know, some of my muscles have atrophied because I'm 72. So, you know, I'm working out with, you know, 10-pound dumbbells, you know, trying to get my muscle tone back. And I'm slowly getting it back. But, you know, it's an uphill battle, you know, once you get over 70. Yeah, and, you know, I'm hearing about friends of mine who are dying in their mid to late 60s. I can't believe Eddie Van Halen was taken from us. Yeah. May he rest in peace. And Neil Peart was a dear friend of mine. John Belushi was a very close friend of mine. I was with John the night before he flew out to California to finish that movie, And he ended up getting shot up by that crazy broad. She gave him a hot dose of heroin and cocaine. And his heart couldn't take it. Me and John used to hang out all the time, and he never used a needle.
And I'd heard that you and Peter both had a good friendship with him back in those days.
Actually, I met John Belushi at Peter's house.
Oh, yeah?
Peter had hooked up with him prior to me. And nothing against Peter, but when John started hanging out with me, you know, I have a great sense of humor and you know, I can rattle off dozens of jokes at a time. You know, John just found it more funny and he enjoyed being with me more so than Peter. At the time, I was dating a lot of fashion models in Manhattan around that time. So, you know, John would call me up and go, hey, I got an ounce of Peruvian flake. All right, let's go to so-and-so and I'll bring a couple of fucking fashion models and we'll have a party.
Oh, God, a night with you two. Jeez.
You know, and at the time, Peter was married. So, you know, well, so was I. But when I was in Manhattan, I was a bachelor. Put it that way.
Oh, man, that's awesome. You mentioned Eddie Van Halen. You ever meet him? Any kind of relationship with Eddie?
Did I ever meet him? Gene brought them into a rehearsal before they were even called Van Halen. And he said, I discovered these guys, and I'm looking at Paul, and I'm going, who are these fucking guys? And I had no idea how talented they were. I just knew that, you know, we were in the middle of rehearsal and I go, Gene, you know, Gene was always so enterprising, you know, with the merchandising and this, that, and the other thing, these fucking movie stars. And that's how he got his rocks off. Me, I just like to party
right. And
record and play on stage. You know, I didn't really get fucked up when I was playing with Kiss until after the show.
Right.
Because, you know, I always had pride and, you know, I didn't want to fuck up solos and stuff when I was performing with Kiss. So I pretty much saved all the partying until after, you know, a couple of beers, a couple of lines of blow, you know, that would be it.
I was watching the Winterland 75 show the other night and I get you guys are all four different, very different personalities. Probably if you hadn't been in a band together, you probably wouldn't want much to do with each other.
Oh.
But I got to say, there was just some amazing chemistry, especially in those first few years, where I think all four of you together, it was just such a bombastic, amazing chemistry between all four of you that you have to take solace and pride in what you did have in those first few years.
It's amazing that you said that, because I've said that to many interviewers. I would say, listen, me, Paul, Peter, and Gene come from four different backgrounds. I mean, you know, the only similarities between me and Peter was that he grew up in Brooklyn, I grew up in the Bronx. He was in a gang, I was in a gang. You know, he liked to get fucked up, I liked to get fucked up. You know, I mean, but, you know, Peter used to be a heroin addict. He used to shoot up dope with Jerry Nolan, the drummer from the Dolls. Be that as it may, you know, I was pretty much anti-drug until Destroyer. And during Destroyer, I met Bob Ezrin, and on the console, he had a mound of cocaine and a bottle of Remy Martin. And Paul and Gene, who are such anti-drug freaks, looked the other way because they, you know, they thought he was such an amazing producer, which he was. And it's okay for Bob Ezrin to do drugs, but I can't do drugs. And when I quit the group, you know, they dragged my name through the fucking mud because of it.
Yeah.
But as far as I'm concerned, you know, those guys were never really in tune with their audience. That was pretty obvious when we recorded The Elder. And I told them this album, it was going to bomb. It's the wrong album, the wrong time. Because all these heavy hard rock groups were happening. And I go, we got to compete with them. And we're known for being a heavy hard rock group. And They said, no, 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 we're going to do this concept album about some old fucking idiot, the Elder. And the fucking album bombed.
Yeah, it wasn't right for the time. And then what sucks is that then after you're out of the band, then they come back with Creatures of the Night.
Everything I told them to do, they did in Creatures of the Night.
Yeah.
Well, every idea I said, I was doing an interview with Billboard, and he proposed the question to me. He said, Ace, would you have quit the band if the Elder album never happened? And for example, let's say your next record would have been Creatures of the Night. And I said, probably not.
Yeah.
I was just so fed up with being overlooked and denied an opinion. Yeah, I'd say something, they go, yeah, duly noted, but we're doing it our way. So, you know, I got tired of that. Right now, you know, for years, I've been my own boss. I do things my way. I hire who I want to play with. And I'm having fun.
Yeah.
I'm not making millions and millions of dollars, but, you know, it's starting to change. You know, my career has been spiraling upward over the last 5-10 years. My agent just called me and said, I'm headlining Mohegan Sun this summer. He goes, you're not playing the smaller club. You're playing the same place Motley Crue and Kiss plays when they perform there.
Nice.
I go, great.
Wow.
So, you know, something's in the wind. It might be the success of my record that's made people realize that, you know, I still got the chops. I'm the only guy out there playing Kiss songs because Kiss retired. And that's what's happening. I know that my record company mentioned to me the other day they're trying to get me a Grammy.
Yeah.
This record, which would be nice. Even if I got nominated but didn't win, I'd be happy because that alone is a feather in your cap.
Yeah, that would be pretty damn cool.
Yeah.
Ace Frehley up on the stage accepting a Grammy. I can see that.
Oh, yeah. I love to do public speaking. You know, it's ironic. It's ironic. You know, when I used to get loaded, I would be terrified of public speaking. You know, and I'd have to have a couple of drinks and do this and that. And once I got sober 17 years ago, I'll get up in front of, you know, 10, 15,000 people and just say what's ever on the top of my head and have fun doing it.
It's pretty cool. But I still wouldn't trade that Tom Snyder appearance for nothing.
I was pretty fucked up on that.
No.
Really?
I drank like a half a bottle of Scully.
Oh.
Way down while I was in the limousine. And then I did some coke before I went on to kind of balance it, you know.
Well, you're hilarious in it, but the equally funny part is just how bothered Gene and Paul were getting by
yeah.
it. It's Gene looked like he had smoke coming out of his ears during the whole thing.
Yeah. And then if you notice, 3/4 of the way through the interview, Paul and Gene both change and they resign themselves to the fact that I'm stealing the show. And if they want to be part of the interview, they got to come with me.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what happened. That, you know, they yeah. started talking about me and hey, when Ace did this and, you know, they didn't want to be excluded. So.
Yeah,
that's what happened. They weren't ready for me. To be honest with you, I've always wanted to be a stand-up comedian.
Yeah.
I mean, like John Belushi said to me one night, he goes, Ace, you're one of the few people that can crack me up. Coming from a comedian with his popularity, that's a huge compliment, yeah. you know? And he actually said to me before he left to finish that film, Neighbors, he said, I got to put you in my next movie.
Mm.
And we all know what happened.
Yeah.
Very sad.
Very sad.
I was affected by that for months.
Well, I want to lighten things up a little bit here. I want to do a little rapid fire with you. I'm going to name off some names, and you just give me the first thing that comes to your mind when I name these names off, all right?
Yeah.
All right. Pixie Esmond.
Is that the gal that used to dress us?
Yep.
Yes, on the Dynasty tour.
Pixie was great. I embarrassed her one day. I haven't told this story very often, but yeah, I'd start drinking sometimes at noon. I'd get to sound check at 4 o'clock, so I was already, I had a pretty good buzz. And I looked inside the dressing room, they're always, washing our clothes, hanging them up, drying this, fixing Jean's wig and whatever. And there was this old guy in the dressing room, and he was bald. I had no idea it was Pixie's father. And we were playing in a town where Pixie grew up. So I just said, "Hey, who's Cue Ball?" And she looks at me with like knives coming out of her eyes. And I ran over to her and gave her a big hug. I said, "Honey, I had a few drinks today. I had no idea it was your dad. I'm so, so sorry."
She told us that story. She totally remembers it.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of times they would not hold back. if I'd have a six pack in me, I'd fight anybody. I'd go up against a football player. I'll give you a perfect example. I'm sitting in a bar with a friend of mine who's much shorter than me, but he was tough and he was built. And he was this Italian friend. And these two cute girls at the bar. And then on the opposite side were like these three football players or whatever the fuck they were. And they were big and they were built. So we're trying to pick up these girls, and so are the football players. So one of them made a wisecrack and said, hey, Goldilocks, why don't you back off or something? I forget what the insult was. So I looked at Frank and I said, "Watch this." So I walk over to the guy who said it and I say, "You got to remember, with heels on, I'm 6'2". So with heels on, I'm 6'4, 6'5. So I'm not short. I got a leather jacket on. And I said to the guy, "You got a problem with me? Because I'm going to tell you something. I'm a black belt in karate. And your friends may grab me after the fact, but you'll never see again for the rest of your fucking life." And I said it with such conviction. He apologized to me that I was going to blind him, just give him one. And I used to do shit like that. I used to bluff. I'm a great poker player.
Boy, I guess.
Never play poker with a guy named Ace. But, I go up to anybody. Nobody scared me. I grew up in the Bronx. I used to get beat up all the time. I was in fights. I was in gangs. I got stabbed when I was 13. Shit happens. I got my cheekbone fractured when I was 20. Came within a 16th inch of puncturing my brain,
Hey.
I grew up in a tough neighborhood and had a tough life, and music saved me from that.
Yeah, I was going to say, where's Big John Hart when you need him?
Oh, man. One night, it was just me and Peter. It was Big John and Rosie.
Rosie Licata.
And two cops. And they were packing. So who the fuck? We felt like we owned the joint. But we went into this biker bar, and it was across the state line. And the motorcycle guys knew that the cops were out of their jurisdiction. So the next thing you know, a fight ensues. I don't know who said what or what happened, but one guy tries to hit me over the head with a chair, and John Hart covers me and he takes the hit. And one of the cops got beat up pretty bad and they stole his gun.
Oh, shit.
And how do you explain that to your sergeant, or your CO? That was pretty nuts. But me and Peter were saved. John Hart grabbed us and fucking threw us in a limo, and we got the fuck out of there. But It was crazy.
Bet you that guy saved your life more than once.
Oh, yeah. See, I knew John before I was in Kiss, because he used to be the head security guy for this theater in New Jersey that had good rock shows. It was kind of like a Fillmore East.
Mm-hmm.
It was that kind of, you know, old vintage theater where they'd have good acts. So I got to meet John before I was in Kiss. So when we ended up hiring him, naturally, he goes, I want to be Ace's bodyguard.
I like a challenge.
Yeah. You know, I used to give him blow all the time, too. So I was always generous with my drugs. You know, if I copped an ounce of coke, you know, I'd be giving it to all my friends left and right, or a bag of pills, whatever.
Do you remember Peter Moose Oroquinto from the early days?
Oroquinto, yeah.
Moose.
What, was he a bodyguard or?
He was Peter's drum tech. He's the one that had his hand blown up from the sticks.
Oh, yeah, I remember him very well. And I remember the night Peter had these sticks. They were metallic, low to charge. And then, like, Peter would hit it and flares would come out. You may have seen it in a video. He overpacked it and hadn't cleaned out the tubes. And, you know, there was residue in the tubes. So it didn't, you know, the charge did not want to go out. It blew up in his hand. Mm-hmm. And it was fucked up. And I don't remember exactly how bad the damage was, but, I think it affected his hand for the rest of his life.
Yeah. We talked to him. It messed him up pretty bad.
Yeah.
Super nice guy, though.
Wonderful guy. All the bodyguards love me because I party with them. Hey, Paul and Gene were above that. I used to play poker with the truck drivers. You know, we had 7 tractor trailers. And I used to play poker with these guys and take all their money. I felt bad, but, you know, hey, you want to play with Ace? You suffer the consequences. And, yeah, I have very fond memories of early Kiss.
Yeah.
And then it got weird. Well, you know, you got to remember in the beginning we roomed together at Holiday Inns. I used to room with Gene. Peter used to room with Paul. Once the live hit and we all became millionaires, then we'd each get our own suite. So I'd be alone except for the groupies. Everybody started getting further and further apart from each other. Everybody, you know, kind of went their own way. Gene started dating starlets. I don't know what the fuck Paul was doing. He stole my sound man's girlfriend and moved in with her, and then she dumped him. And then he got married to Donald Trump's wife's college roommate.
Oh, yeah, that was Pam, yeah.
He had a kid with her, and then she dumped him. And now he's married to some chick. I don't know. I've only met her once or twice. Shannon's pretty cool. I've hung out with her. I remember when Gene was doing Kissology. Shannon had just gotten a laptop, and she didn't know how to fucking use it. And I'm a computer wizard. So, you know, I'd say, move over. I sit down, and I was showing her how to do stuff, you know, because Gene didn't know. He had people doing it.
That's pretty cool.
You know, I ended up teaching myself computer graphics, computer animation. You know, remember during Psycho Circus, the 4 faces used to morph? I did that.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm.
A lot of people don't know it because Paul and Gene never gave me credit where credit was due. They always downplayed me.
Yeah, I always thought if everyone could have just appreciated what the 4 of you had and just be happy being peers.
Look, imagine me rejoining the group for the end of the road tour. Instead of having to paper the houses, you know, which they did on many occasions, because I was told by one of the agents at Live Nation, they only sold 60% of a house. They'd give away free tickets to make it look good. If I would have been in the band, they would have sold out every show. But Gene wanted me back. Doc McGee wanted me back because my lawyer plays golf with Doc. It was Paul. Paul didn't want me back in the band. You know, he didn't want to give up any of his spotlight. And he knew if I rejoined the group, I'd get all the spotlights.
Yeah.
And those guys are control freaks and like to run a tight ship. When Paul says something to Tommy, you know, jump, Tommy will say, how high? You know, I was never like that.
Yeah, and they've even kind of said so themselves. You know, they got the band together that they want now, you know, and you don't really fit that anymore. But I always wondered, you know, because Paul Stanley said some kind of low-down stuff over the years about you, but then a few years back on Origins 1, you guys do a stellar cover of Fire and Water by Free. So if he's saying all this funny shit in the media, what's he like when you guys are face-to-face to do that video? Is he nice and respectful to you?
Paul's hot and cold. When I'm with Paul, Paul is nice to me. When I'm not with Paul, he'll stab me in the back. Mm. That's just Paul. On the other hand, Gene always says what he means and means what he says.
Yeah.
And sometimes, you know, we'd have arguments and disagreements, but he'd always stick to his guns. I remember when I came up with the idea for the sparkle guitar on the reunion tour, you know?
That was cool.
We used in Rock and Roll All Night. And when I started that idea, Gene said, that's never going to work. I said, watch. You know, so I had a guy design something so the spinning wheel was perpendicular to the neck so I wouldn't get hit with the sparks.
Yeah.
I told the guy, stand clear of me when I'm doing my solo. And Gene came up to me and he apologized to me. He goes, Ace, I was wrong. You know, Gene is that kind of guy. Paul would never come over and apologize to me about anything. And I get it. I'd be jealous of me too if I was him.
I was watching a reaction video. This guy was reviewing Gene's Firestarter video. I don't know if you've ever seen it, but it's Gene dressed up like a pimp. And it's kind of ridiculous. And at the end of the video, the guy looks at the camera and he goes, you know who wouldn't have done this? Ace Frehley.
Who wouldn't have done it?
Yeah, because the video was just so awful. He's like, you know who would not do this? Ace Frehley, because you're above that.
True.
Yeah.
So there's no video of Ace dressed like a pimp coming up in the future, I guess.
Gene told me he would do anything for money.
I believe it.
Remember the second film he did with Rutger Hauer?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Wanted Dead or Alive. That's a fun movie.
And he ended up dressing up as a broad and walking on a bar.
Oh, no, that was Never Too Young to Die.
Whatever the fucking name of it was. I never paid any attention to his films. I thought they sucked. I wouldn't consider Gene a great actor. I wouldn't consider me a great actor, Paul or Peter. You know, we're great musicians and songwriters. You know, but Gene is very confident. He just thinks he's great.
Yeah.
He can do no wrong. And sometimes he gets caught with his pants down.
But his socks on.
Yeah. Gene used to have a beautiful apartment in Manhattan, and he had bought the building, and it was like 3 or 4 levels, and he also had the roof rights. He had a little tiny studio in his walk-in closet, and he'd go, Ace, I write a song every day in this little closet. I go, why? Because, you know, I'm disciplined and that's what I do. So he'd write 365 songs in a year and we'd end up using 3 or 4. I go, that's a lot of wasted time. I'm the kind of guy that won't write a song in a month or two. And then one weekend I'll get all inspired over something and write 3 songs in the course of a weekend. You know, I can't do something unless I feel it.
Yeah, that's why they call it art.
Yeah.
I don't believe in pushing myself. you know, if I'm not feeling it, I go next.
Yeah. I do. Before we wrap up with you, I do want to give a shout out because some of our friends are involved in your band and also play on your album. So our buddies Ryan and Jeremy play in your band, and
great guys.
We go back with them a long ways here in Nashville. And also want to give a shout out to Joey Casada, who does a great job playing drums on some of the songs on the new record.
Joey's a great guy.
Yeah.
I met Joey a couple of times, and he did some great work on the record, you know.
Oh, and thank you for finally recording Back Into My Arms again. Because we love those 80s demos. Those are great songs.
Yeah, I'll tell you how that happened. I was sitting in Steve's studio in his basement, and we were on YouTube, and we're just flipping by Ace Frehley's songs, and he saw a demo, Back Into My Arms Again. He goes, "What the fuck is this?" I go, "Ah, it's just some song I wrote 35, 40 years ago." So he goes, "Let me listen." So he starts playing it, and he goes, "This is a great song."
Yeah.
I said, "Yeah, it's not a bad song." He goes, "You ever record it and put it on a record?" I go, "No."
Yeah, we've been calling for that for years.
Kind of the way my life is. I have at least 25 songs recorded that I've never used. Yeah. In the back of my basement, I have two giant road cases filled with 2-inch tape.
Wow.
Filled. You know, I don't know what's on 2/3, 3/4 of those tapes.
Man, you got to hire somebody to go through that shit.
What I have to do is once I slow down my career, I have to pull out those tapes and I have to bake them because, you know, 2-inch tape, you know, if it's older than 20 or 30 years, you got to bake it because it becomes brittle when you play it. So you get one good play out of it if you bake it at a certain temperature for a half an hour. And then you transfer it to digital, to a drive, and then you have it for posterity. And yeah. I got to do that. That's going to be a big project.
After you retire, we'll still be getting new Ace Frehley music that we never heard before. I love it.
I have no intentions of slowing down at this juncture.
Good, because we have no intentions of not buying your stuff.
Thank you very much.
Always. I got one. I know Chris Ray wrap up. I got one. I always kind of wondered about this. Back in 89, when you come out with Trouble Walking, 1 week later, Kiss comes out with Hot in the Shade. Is there something to that, or is that just a weird coincidence?
Yeah, you got to remember, once I went solo, I really didn't pay much attention to what Kiss was doing. What I can tell you is... did Hot in the Shade have that song, Hide Your Heart?
Both albums did.
Yours is better.
And I got a hold of a demo of that, and I decided to record it. After I had recorded it, subsequently, Gene calls me up, and he goes, "Ace, we prefer it if you didn't use that song." I go, "Well, it's a little late in the game, Gene, because I invested thousands of dollars recording it, and it came out, in my opinion, really good. And I think they were going to use that as their first single off Hot in the Shade." I also remember while I was recording that album, I asked Eric to play on a track or two. He said, "Oh, great, man, I'd love to." And then he calls me up like a few days later, you know, in a really solemn mood. And he goes, "Paul and Gene won't let me play on your record."
Dang.
So petty.
Yeah.
Who gives a fuck who plays what on what, you know?
Yeah.
We're all musicians. We're all in the same. We're all connected.
Around when Trouble Walking came out, I heard a rumor that you were being talked to about coming back into the band. It would have been Kiss with Ace and Eric with the like a kind of sort of a version of a reunion tour at that time.
Yeah, there was some talk about it. Hmm. I didn't like the terms, and although I really love playing with Eric. He's such a great drummer, and he has such a snap in his snare, because I jammed with him at a convention years ago, and we were doing Shock Me, and he just blew away the drummer that was playing previously. And I said, "Yeah, now that's a drummer." I always tipped my hat to Eric. Me and Eric have always been friends. We've kept in touch. during all the bullshit that went down with Kiss.
Oh, you're talking about Eric Singer?
Eric Singer's a great guy. And he respects me. I respect him. I know he would prefer having me play guitar in the band than Tommy. I don't think he's a huge fan of Tommy, but it is what it is. You know, Paul and Gene call the shots.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. Sounds to me like even if you weren't paying attention to them back then, they were definitely paying attention to what you were doing. If they knew what songs were going to be on your album, what day it's coming out, can we put out an album really close to that? It's weird.
They had spies in my camp. They would always put me down in interviews. What pissed me off the most was that they always say they fired me.
Yeah, they never fired you.
I hated that. Yeah. You know, and, you know, people would believe them. But, you know, the fact remains, you know, both times I'd left the band, I quit of my own free will. And that was that. I was done.
Man, Ace, I'm glad you're still around doing stuff, still putting out great albums. You've been putting out great albums for years now, you know, since you made your comeback with Anomaly. It's like every couple of years we're getting a new kick-ass Ace Frehley album. And as a lifelong fan, I just like to say thanks, man. Thanks for still being around and caring enough about us as fans to give us new music. You know, we're all Kiss fans. We don't get new music from Kiss anymore, but we still get the real thing from Ace Frehley. Thank you for that.
My pleasure. It's actually a two-way street. You know, you get a lot of pleasure out of my music. I get a lot of pleasure out of recording it and performing it. You know, at the end of a show, when I see everybody up on their feet, it makes me happy and it warms my heart and it keeps me going. So, you know, it's a two-way street.
And Aaron, you need to let him know about one other important fact about, you know, your family.
Oh, well, I'm sure you probably have gotten this a lot over the years, but I actually named my son Ace after you. Two reasons. Because I wanted to name him after Ace Frehley, and two, he was the first little kid in kindergarten who knew how to spell his name. But years ago, when he was a little bitty kid, we brought him to meet you at the Wild Horse Saloon when you were playing here. And I'll never forget, as long as I live, I say, hey, this is my son. His name is Ace. And you're like, oh, hey, Ace, I'm Ace. And then right before they snap the picture of you guys, you look at the camera, you give it thumbs up, and you go, pair of aces. And I was like, I'm a good dad.
I said pair of aces.
Pair of aces, yeah, man. I'll never forget that. You know, and I always wonder, too, with a guy like you, because being a huge fan, you know, it's like, I'm talking to Ace Frehley. This is awesome. And you got people that come up to you all the time and are starstruck. I mean, because you're Ace freaking Frehley. Is there anybody in your life, in your career, that you were ever starstruck by meeting? Because everybody does it to you. Has it ever happened to you?
When I met Hendrix, it was pretty humbling. I set up Mitch Mitchell's drums at a concert and roadied for Jimi Hendrix Experience.
Wow.
In 1970, before I was in Kiss. I also roadied for Steppenwolf and Johnny Winter and Janis Joplin. I got myself in the weirdest predicament, sneaking backstage. You know, because back then it was a whole different ballgame, you know.
Yeah.
You know, the stage manager would go, hey, who are you? I go, nobody. He goes, can you do anything? We're shorthanded. I say, yeah, I can do anything. Change strings, set up drums, whatever, amps. So they put me to work. One day the guy says, hey, remember when John Kay was playing that clear Dan Armstrong? I'm in a room and they hand me his guitar and they go, change the strings. So I'm changing the strings on the Dan Armstrong. I'm halfway through the process and John Kay walks in. He goes, what are you doing? He goes, I'm changing the strings on your guitar. That's what they told me to do. Next thing you know, he's feeding the strings through the hole at the bridge so I could, like, you know, attach them to the tuning pegs. Very cool guys.
Nice.
You know, if I walked into If I walked into a dressing room and I saw some strange guy fucking around my Les Paul, I'd get upset. Yeah.
So I'm not trying that the next time you come here.
He kind of saw that I knew what I was doing. So he said, let's just get it done. You know, he had to be on stage, you know. And I was sitting behind the drummer of Johnny Winteran, Randy Z. I kept handing him drumsticks because he was breaking a drumstick every song. Maniac.
Wow.
Well, and also, I know you were starstruck by Dick Clark when you guys did the In Concert TV show, right?
Well, wouldn't be. Yeah.
He was a legend.
He was a friend of my manager, Bill O'Coin, and that was a favor. I remember meeting Don Kirshner. Don Kirshner's rock concert. And I remember meeting Mike Douglas.
Oh, you mentioned Mike. Let me ask you this. The Mike Douglas appearance. Gene is such a character on that appearance. What were you guys is thinking when you're watching him out there being interviewed and getting taken apart by Toadie Fields?
Believe it or not, after we finished playing, the producer walks backstage into our dressing room and he goes, Mike wants one of you guys to come out and sit. And I was terrified because I was nervous back then to be in front of, you know, millions of people. You know, of course, Gene said, I'll do it. And so Gene got out there, and he was kind of funny. I remember we had met Toadie Fields in an airport. She was a riot. I made a joke about Gene. You know, she goes, you're probably a nice Jewish boy. And he goes, you should only know. And she goes, I know, you can't hide the hook.
She took him apart.
Too funny. Oh,
man. I think I have another interview.
We've gone along with you, and we appreciate you taking so much time.
It was such a pleasure talking to you guys. Yeah. You have a great day, and I'll see you on the road.
All right. Sounds good. Thank you, Ace.
Thank you so much.
'Cause we're blind. By science, and we're blinded by fear. It's like a mind attack. It could bring to crack.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.